I'd like to call to order the regular session of the Berlin Mayor and Council for Monday, February 10th, 2020. It has been our tradition here for many, many years. I'd like to invite everyone to join the Mayor and Council in reciting the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever. Amen.
Please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
The first item on the agenda tonight is the approval of the regular session minutes of January 27th.
Motion to approve.
We have a motion by Councilmember Goyas to approve the meeting minutes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Please let me show that the vote was unanimous. Okay. Next, we're very pleased, as is done each year for Atlantic General Hospital, to give us an update on what they've been up to, which is always a lot. And so we're very pleased to have you here.
I think I have one. Thank you. I appreciate it.
And again, we all know you and everything, so if you just introduce yourself for the record and for the folks here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm Michael Franklin. I'm President and CEO of Atlantic General Hospital. And thank you and council members for taking the time again to allow us to share with you what's going on at Atlantic General and what we've got planned for the upcoming year and some of the challenges we're facing also in our community. Obviously, we've got a strategic plan that's our 2020 vision, which we're now in 2020, so we've begun the process of trying to figure out what we're going to be doing beyond 2020, and we'll be coming forward with that over the next year at our corporation meeting. But following on that vision and mission and the challenges we have with that strategic plan and our process for establishing annual goals and tactics associated with that. So we, just to refresh, we focus on what we call the quadruple aim, and you hear that a lot in the media, the triple aim and all that, where we're focused on how do we undertake efforts to improve the health of our population or the community that we're serving? How do we do a better job of making it a positive experience for patients and family members when they come for services or in the community? How are we then also reducing the cost of health care in our population, in the community? And then finally, what's the fourth aim, is how do we take care of the people who are taking care of our community and create an environment that embraces them? So all of our goals we structure them to focus on this and focus on those five rights principles associated with our strategic plan. And over this year, this current year, 2020, the initiatives that we're working on are one we're planning right now. We're working on grant funding from the state to help with some of the costs associated with building an ambulatory surgery center so we can get some of that surgery pressure off of the hospital and expand the surgical services available in our community. We're also added to and updated the breast diagnostic services in the hospital. So we have 3D mammography, screening mammography over in our West Ocean City location. And at the hospital location, now everything can be followed up with three-dimensional imaging also. And all of our services are now digital and three-dimensional. We brought in Dr. Bryce Blanton, and we're integrating behavioral health. We have a psychiatrist now working with our physician practices to integrate that better. We're working on a program with school-based telehealth where we're just going to be starting in a couple of months. We'll be starting a kind of a test program between the hospital and the Pocomoke High School. When kids are sick, coming to the nurse in Pocomoke High School, we have a telemedicine platform on which the parents can meet with the physician and the school nurse with the child all in the same virtual exam room. So parents don't have to take off work. They don't have to bring their kids up for health services, and we can help take care of some of the kids in the down part of the county so they don't have to make that 30-mile trip up here. And we're going to see how that works in our schools, and then how can we expand that telemedicine to do better in other places based upon what we learned through this experience. We're expanding our outpatient rehab services to deal with focusing on people with chronic pain. We've changed the clinical communication systems in the hospital so that we're with our upgrades and what we're doing, we'll talk about that in a little bit, all the capital improvements we're making inside the hospital. We've upgraded the communication system now so that all of our clinical staff are working from smartphones. The patient rooms are smart and communicate with the nurses where they are. So when a patient pushes a call button, it goes directly to that patient's nurse. It doesn't have to go to a desk where a secretary then asks what the problem was and see who needs to sent there and try to find the nurse associated with that patient. And all that time is spent. That patient right away gets the nurse who picks up the smartphone and talks to the patient, finds out what's going on, and we can be more responsive. Plus, all the nurses and all the physicians can directly link with each other. They know who's taking care of what patients, and they can push a button. They can directly link with each other. So we've created a smart communication system within the hospital to make it a better workplace, but also to take care of patients better. We're working on expanding the care delivery and consolidating bringing some of our specialty and primary care practices together in the Ocean Pines area, and then also designing those types of facilities to be safer for seniors with our aging population, and knowing that most of the people going to visit physicians and getting health care services in our community at the hospital, it's about 65% of our patients are over the age of 65. How do we design facilities that are easier to get to and easier to walk through and get to services more readily throughout the community based upon the age of our population? So those are all the things that we're working on this year to continue what we've been working on through our strategic plan. But one of the things that we do as we're looking back and trying to move forward while looking back is to measure, were we successful under the strategic plan and doing the things that we need to do? Again, talking about all this is focused from that quadruple aim, so what about the patient experience? And if you look at the patient experience scores, we're the green bar on the left, and we want that green bar to be higher than all the other bars. And pretty much across the board, we are doing that. So we're getting better patient satisfaction scores than the industry when we look at, we use Press Ganey, which is a national firm, to measure this, except for in the hospital environment. And so we're in the process right now of upgrading the hospital environment because that has been something that we measure below, both on the most recent quarter and also on an annual basis.
If you don't mind, what do you define as hospital environment?
This measures people who are in the hospital as inpatients, and a couple of key measures is how quiet was it at night, specifically. They ask that question. And the other key question from the HCAHPS is, these are national, and every hospital in the country has to ask these questions the same way. So there's that one, and then there's also one about the cleanliness of your environment around you. Some of that has to do with, again, if the way the facilities were built 27 years ago, we can do a better job of noise reduction, and that's one of the things that we're doing in our redesign. From a cleanliness perspective, when it's older and it looks older, it doesn't look as clean. And it's also harder to clean when you know, the types of flooring you put down that requires you to wax it more frequently. Well, it's hard when your rooms are always full to wax the floors in those rooms. So as we design the facility, as redesign it, we're putting down floors that require less care and don't have those types of issues. So it's how do we mitigate problems that were caused by being built 27 years ago?
Thank you.
There are also patient satisfaction scores associated with our physician practices. Same thing. We want that green bar to be higher than the other bars. And across the board, we pretty much are, except for this part that says access to care. And basically that gets down to the numbers of physicians that we have in our community. And how do we, particularly with primary care, how do we expand the access to primary care within our community? So we're reacting. What you'll see later on is how we'll be responding to and how we have been responding to these areas that show that we're not as strong from a patient experience as we want to be. When you look at how we've improved the health of the community or how our strategic plan has moved us in that direction, there are these national measures. There's a university that measures this annually since 2011, and they compare all the counties across the country, and then we can compare within each state the different counties. And they look at health outcomes in particular and health factors. Health outcomes meaning how long people are living and the quality of life they have, and the health factors are those things, the health behaviors, how many people are smokers in your community. Socioeconomic factors with look at unemployment rates and income levels. The physical environment looks at air quality and housing availability, and then 20% of that has to do with the clinical care. So those two, the green and the blue, are the key factors for us from a hospital perspective. And if you look at the health factors and all, we have improved because out of the 24 counties in Maryland, Worcester County is now ranked 15th from a health factors perspective, those social issues in particular. Back in 2011, when they first started that, we were ranked 16th. So things have improved a little bit, but we've got a lot to do in working in the community to create a healthier community, which is part of our goals. From the health outcome side of things, longevity, quality of life, those types of things, more healthcare related, Worcester County is ranked 10th in this state out of the 24 counties, which is good. We moved up from 14th in the state back in 2011. So we've had a lot of movement in the right direction and creating a healthier community through what we've been doing. And a lot of the things that we've done from a quality perspective and how we've made care safer, the state and the payment system has incentive payments along there for how we measure compared to the rest of the hospitals in the state. There are 45 hospitals in the state. They draw thresholds for when they're going to incentivize or when they're going to penalize hospitals from a quality perspective. And this past year, they doled out almost $63 million in penalties to hospitals and only about $3 million in rewards. Atlantic General was one of the hospitals that received rewards. We had by far the highest score in patient satisfaction and in emergency room timeliness in the emergency room and those types of factors, and then also from mortality and from patient safety points. So we ranked in the top five in the state overall, which allowed us to get a couple of $100,000 in rewards out of that $3 million that they gave out, and there were only about seven hospitals that received any awards. Overall, when we look at how our working through the strategic vision of ours and through the way we establish the goals for the Maryland hospital-acquired conditions, when we look at it from a quality-based reimbursement perspective, hospital-acquired conditions are like surgical site infections and those types of things. We received incentive payments there. We received from a readmission rate, which means people come into the hospital and then they go out, we discharge them, and they're back in the hospital again within 30 days for any reason at all. That's measured across the country. But we got the highest possible award that the state provides from an incentive payment because of our reduction in readmission rates. And then I mentioned the quality-based reimbursement or the $200,000 we got in awards. So we've been able to, through this, maximize pretty much the amount of additional revenue we're able to get from the state based upon their performance-based reward system or penalty system. But we received over $700,000 this year in awards. But that also helps us to support the uncompensated care and the programs that we provide in our community. This year it was over $16.6 million of services that we gave back to the community, whether that's through uncompensated care delivered at the hospital, whether that's through our flu shot clinic, where we provide free flu shots throughout the fall, or through our financial assistance program, or through our health fairs, those types of things. And also, we've been able to recruit. We now have over 250 physicians who are credentialed on our medical staff. of these. We've expanded our specialists, and now we have a lot of specialists that many communities don't have access to, like rheumatology and endocrinology for key issues that are chronic illnesses that our elderly population faces. And we now have more than 925 employees at the hospital with a payroll of over $58 million that is being reinvested back into our community. If you look at how our hospital is performing, again, comparing this to what we're trying to do from a strategic plan, the hospital alone, we've been able in our, if you look at the cost of care line on the hospital, we've with the inflationary rate of costs and hospital costs and payroll costs, we've actually reduced the total cost, the expenses in the hospital year over year from 2018 to 2019, which is very rare in healthcare nowadays. But we've been able to do a better job of managing the care and managing the staff and doing a better job of managing our expenses over the past year, which has helped create more of an opportunity for us to, we've also had a lot of care transition into the community. So we've been investing a lot in our health physician practices, and I'll show you that in a few minutes, but we've our operating margin overall, so that's bringing all the physician practices and the outpatient stuff together. Our investment has caused us to have an overall decline in operating margin, but as you all know, with depreciation and all that, our cash position stayed stable, but we've invested a lot more money in our community and making sure that care is available more readily. And the physicians that we've expanded access to, we've added to our urology practice. We began that about 5 years ago, and now we needed to expand with another physician. We have a nurse practitioner also working in that facility. As I mentioned earlier, we've added psychiatry and a psychiatry practice. We've added over the last couple of years the endocrinology and the rheumatology practices. And then to expand, as I showed in our patient experience report, that access to care has been a key for us. We've expanded quite a few advanced practice providers, which are nurse practitioners or physician assistants, that are providing care in our community now to augment the primary care practices in our community. And we've also been working, helping around the community, particularly in Ocean City with the homeless outreach team, and where we've been supporting the physician that's supporting that whole team that's dealing with the homeless population that particularly takes up residence in our community in the summertime. So we're doing a lot to expand what's happening in the community from the standpoint of the services and the care that's being provided. Part of that is supporting from a capital perspective. As you know and as you all have helped support, we had a $10 million capital campaign over the last 3 years that we completed back in December, and we exceeded our goal. Our goal was $10 million. We exceeded that by raising $12.5 million, which, again, everybody in here was very, very generous in helping with those five, help us with the five facility upgrades. One was the women's health that we talked about and all the women's health services. And that has resulted, and we've had an extremely good response to what we've done with moving a lot of these things more conveniently into the community. And we've had to add Saturday hours now for providing that care because of the response that we've had, which is more convenient also for the people who live in our community to be able to get those services on Saturday. As you know, also, we've completed the Jack Burbidge Regional Cancer Care Center. And again, you can see that the new patients, we're continuing to see a great growth in the number of patients that we're caring for in our community. And you'll see in our community needs assessment later, that's still one of the key issues for our community is cancer care. But if you look at the death rates in our community, which kind of tells you about access and quality to cancer care service, or access to quality cancer care services in our community historically, there is a Healthy People 2020, which was a national target for survival of the age-adjusted death rate from cancer. And the federal government wanted everybody to work on programs to get down to that threshold. And we're not down there yet on the Eastern Shore, but since we began our cancer program several years ago, we've begun moving toward achieving that goal faster than they have in other parts of our region. Three, what we're working on now that I mentioned before is working on the inpatient part of the hospital and remodeling the hospital and upgrading what's happening inside the hospital. The state gave us over $1 million in grant funding to assist us with that portion of our planning. And then when we're completed with that, and as we're working for now the ambulatory surgery center and upgrading surgical services, and then finally wrapping back around and making sure we're right-sizing the emergency room for the changes that have occurred in our community and the growth in our community and making sure we're providing the right services. So those are all things that we've been working on through this strategic plan. And as we're wrapping it up and moving forward and then getting into our next, our beyond 2020. This is what we're looking at from a from an Ocean Pines facility perspective and bringing ambulatory surgery and other sources of care closer to where people live and getting some of the pressure off of Healthway Drive and the different facilities that we have there. So beyond 2020, we've been working with our community health needs assessment. We have to do this every 3 years. And what it's showing is that we all know this, that our community is aging with the baby boomers retiring, more people moving down here because it's a great place to live. That's a wonderful thing for us, but we also have to figure out how to take care of these folks because we want them to come down here, stay down here, and people are living longer than before. So we've got the challenges of number one topic of interest for this population is healthcare and how do we deal with their healthcare services. And if you look at the populations by age groups, you can see that the care receivers are growing much faster in our communities than other communities, and the caregivers, that population is not growing as much. So we've got this challenge of how do we work with that scarce resource to make sure that we're able to continue to take care of all the folks that are moving down here. One of the other demographic changes that's happening based upon what's come out of Beacon and what we use for our planning is the growth in the Hispanic population on Delmarva. How are we caring for that population and making services that are appropriate for them? But also, because it's a much younger population, their average age is 28 years old that are relocating here. Is there a way for us to tap into that to help take care of the aging population in our community? So there are these opportunities and challenges for us. As I said, the key areas of concern from our community health needs assessment, number one, is now access to care that people are concerned about. And part of that is how do I get in to see a physician? With the population growth, we have to grow enough providers and physicians to be able to take care of them. And then number two, what's been number one in the past is cancer. Still, the prevalence of cancer is one of the top concerns that people in our community have. What are we doing to take care of that? And diabetes is number three. So how are we expanding care to make sure we're dealing with the different chronic illnesses and concerns that folks have? So these are going to be building into our strategic plan going forward. How do we engage partners through online care? If we're not able to provide it ourselves, things like genetic testing we're using in our cancer center for people through virtual care and using telemedicine. We can do we do genetic testing through the University of Maryland for patients who are at high risk for genetically based cancers and their family members. And as I mentioned earlier, we're going to be using this in the schools to see how we can expand care around the region and do different things to make sure that we're connecting better with the population. And as I mentioned earlier, how do we take care of the elderly population better? If we make them travel less, that's easier on them and it's safer for them. So how can we figure all those things out? So that's a very quick fly through of what we've been doing and what we need to be focused on in the future and what you're going to be hearing about from us as we develop our new strategic plan. I'd be happy to answer any questions that anybody might have.
I have a question.
Yes.
Are you repaving Healthway Drive? No, I'm on a serious
yes.
note, I've heard
yes,
some
we
good
are,
news,
we
so
are.
I would like to pass that along.
Yes. It took us probably the last 6 years to find out who's responsible for Healthway Drive, and we finally gotten that figured out. Now we are working on the State Highway Administration is going to be redoing that corner there, and so we're going to time when they repave that, continuing that paving down through Healthway Drive.
Well, I've heard a lot of good feedback from the providers on the ambulance, that because it's magnified immensely when you're in the back of that thing, mm-hmm. Taking a patient to the hospital. So it goes a long way, and I figured I'd pass that along.
The incoming road is much better than the outgoing road, yeah. So at least when the patient's on there, it's not as big of a bounce.
Yes.
But I think we understand that work should be started this year.
Yeah, we'll be finishing that sometime in the spring. When the State Highway Administration is going to be starting work on that corner there anytime soon.
Supposed to be today.
Good.
Oh, really?
I saw a earth mover sitting out there. I didn't know if that was somebody else
parking it there. That's very good news.
But that is once they get that ready to pave, and then we'll just keep it all and get it all paved.
Thank you.
Great job. Thank you.
Again, this is always very helpful and very enlightening, and I hope that I'm sure the public finds this as interesting as we do. And, it's interesting that 30 years ago, we didn't have either of our three main economic drivers that make this town what it is today. The number one driver is healthcare, because 30 years ago, there was no AGH. And then hospitality was second. We weren't known as a hospitality community 30 years ago. And then the third was boutique retail shopping. Mm-hmm. We don't do big box stores. Mm-hmm. But all three of those put together is probably 80% of our local economy, including the hospitality, of course, restaurants and dining,
right.
And things of that
right.
nature. So, AGH has been a tremendous benefit to the community in terms of health care. There's just no, when Betsy and I moved back here in 1971, there was one doctor in the town of Berlin. If that doctor was out of town or sick,
right.
You had to go to Ocean City, Selbyville, or Salisbury. And so, I think we'll never have that situation again, but I hope we never take for granted the great healthcare services you all provide.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you all. Thank you again for your time.
Thank you. Dr. Gantz. I went to him.
Our third item on the agenda tonight is a motion 2020-04, and that is to approve the use of Stephen Decatur Park by the Worcester County Recreation and Parks for tennis clinic and drop-in tennis on Tuesdays in May, and then also toddler gym on Wednesdays in May and June. So, you introduce yourself to everybody, because we start to know you, but we that way Noel will know, and you can tell us a little bit about what you each
not
of
a problem. Good evening, Mr. Mayor. Good evening, Town Council. My name is Myro Small. I'm here on behalf of the Worcester County Rec Department, and I'm here to promote our three programs that are being offered this spring. The first of which being our toddler gym program, devoted to families within the community who have toddlers ages 1 through 5. This program will promote social interaction amongst the families, as well as our program managers providing physical activity. The program will run May 13th through June 10th, about a four-week program. The cost of that program for the 4 weeks will be $20 per family, which financial aid is also provided. The second of which is a tennis stroke clinic, which we offered previously in the fall, which was successful for us. And that would be taught by a tennis professional named Bruce Truitt, who is willing to instruct the program for us for free. And this is a $3 drop-in fee, which the program will run from May 5th to May 12th. Following our stroke clinic, we plan to offer our drop-in tennis program, which we previously offered last fall as well, which would be $3 per participant, and that's open to the whole community.
So you're fairly optimistic you'll have continue to have good participation, and maybe even more, because it won't be the first time.
The reason why we're offering the program the second time is because it's been in high demand and it's been requested by the community. We get a lot of emails and phone calls asking what's our next program being offered at Stephen Decatur Park. With the toddler gym program, we've been offering it for the past 5 years for the town of Snow Hill, and we average about 30 families per quarter for each session. So we're trying to duplicate the same thing up here in the northern end of the county.
That's a great thing.
Yeah.
you bring any equipment, I mean, other park equipment, or do you just utilize what's there? Or?
We provide our own equipment for each program, especially the toddler gym.
Do you have anywhere on the form that, or the flyers that shows that you'll be offering financial aid?
Yes. Right across the front of the flyer, we have it in bold there. Financial aid is provided for those who demonstrate the need and show proof of eligibility. And through the proof of eligibility, I mean any kind of documentation, mostly through the Board of Education, if they can provide that they get free and reduced lunch.
That's pretty much good for us. I'm missing it on the other two, I think, on the stroke
clinic. That's just for the toddler gym. For the stroke clinic and the drop in tennis, that's an adult program, and that's $3 per. There's no financial aid provided for those.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So I think you need a motion from us?
Yes, sir.
Move to approve this request.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilman Burrell to approve both requests made by the Worcester County Recreation and Parks for the adult tennis program and the toddler program as presented by Michael. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Congratulations. We look forward to both programs and hope you have much success.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Become an annual,
yes.
Annual tradition.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, Town Council.
The mayor talked about it being two programs, but actually it's three programs.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry. Three. All right. Good. Thank you.
I appreciate it. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Number four on our agenda is a special collections policy for solid waste collection in the town of Berlin. And Town Administrator Jeff Fleetwood will be summarizing and explaining what this is all about.
For folks that were here about a month and a half ago, we did present to the mayor and council a request to adopt a revision to our policy for bulk pickup. It did not go before a vote. A lot of conversation in the audience. Mr. Dave Wheaton, Mary Boland, and myself have browbeat this significantly again. What you have in front of you tonight, Mayor and Council, is pretty much the same policy that we presented a month and a half ago with some major exceptions. And the major exception, hands down, there is no money involved in this. What we're asking is for the Mayor and Council to consider a number of items, a cap on the number of items that would be picked up. In this policy as well, one of the things that we are hoping for, and it's going to be a blitz from a advertising perspective through utility bills, flyers, etc. But the another major issue is when the public works folks are out picking up this bulk pickup, the number of mattresses that are not wrapped, the amount of furniture that is not wrapped. So I do want to present again, and I do want to say this to the citizens of this town. It's not everybody that's doing this. I fully recognize that. But there needs to be a limit put on this. We know that construction material will not be picked up. You can see here in these pictures real quick, just an array of things that happened over the last bulk pickup. Can you go to the next one, Mary? I'll give you an idea of what goes out for bulk pickup.
I told you.
I mean, take a look. It's a Christmas parade twice a year. But I don't say that facetiously or jokingly. I'm being serious. You know, a question was asked a couple months ago, you know, what? Give me an idea of some things you pick up. And one of the things that was mentioned was a refrigerator. And the question was asked, how do you pick it up? And then the comment was, we put it in a backhoe and we dump it. And the reaction was, a backhoe? So, I mean, those things aren't going to go away. We're here to serve, and I fully respect that. But what I'm asking the mayor and council to do, again, the policy that you have in front of you has a number that we've decided that we think fits. It's open to discussion. We put an arbitrary number in there of four. Again, no dollar amount to any citizen in the town on this, but I do want to stress again that mattresses. Mary, go back a minute. Where's the one picture we have with the mattresses? I'm sorry. Lower right, that's right. You can just take a look at this one house. One, two, three, four mattresses for one pickup. So from a health perspective, I definitely want it stressed and pushed that that is a requirement. It's not an option. Okay? We made bags available to citizens of the town. We advertised that. And I'll let Dave Wheaton speak for this. The last bulk pickup, probably 50 mattress bags went out of town hall. One mattress was in a mattress bag. The other 49 bags were used for leaves. Okay? It's not doing these guys justice when they go out from a health perspective if we don't comply with what we're saying here.
Now, with this policy, can you go back to the parade? What's going to go out? Like, if we enact the policy as it's written here, we won't be seeing this, right? We will see a truck with maybe two people going to pick something up. It won't be
less,
a lot of wear and tear on our equipment, right?
It'd be less equipment. And then the other thing that's in this policy that would be a huge help to the staff, it mentions in here, if you've got something for bulk pickup, you will call downstairs at Town Hall and say, I live at 123 Elm Street, and I've got stuff for bulk pickup. Why that? What they have to do when they do bulk pickup, they have to go down every street in town, and they may go down some where there's nothing. So it will alleviate the need on the mileage.
I would really like to not see the parade twice a year.
And there's,
I mean,
and there's,
stick to the Christmas.
Don't be fooled by this. There's at times more than that, because Tim's folks, the electric utility, take stuff out as well.
Yeah, this would be good to note, and again, I'm not sure if everyone here, what the items that the bulk pickup includes if this policy is adopted is furniture, carpet, rugs, mattresses, tables and chairs, toilets, sinks, and appliances and electronics. Those are, I would call, normal household items that everyone wears out or replaces from time to time. What it doesn't include, and this is where the problems have come in, hazardous waste, construction materials such as doors and windows, cabinets and countertops, lumber, fencing, drywall, paint, yard waste and brush, propane tanks, chemicals, insecticides, automotive fluid, and tires. I think this is a common sense approach. Again, it's not everybody, but if the exceptions that are currently, I think, abusing the current policy, if they'll just use some common sense and courtesy, and again, if they have a question, they can always call and we'll have someone talk to them. We're not, you know, we're easy to reach. Yes, sir.
Jeff, before I think of the reasonable number, I know as a homeowner, I don't have a problem with that.
And that's twice a year now. Remember that.
That's correct. However, in some cases you do, okay, like somebody has four kids and they want to replace the mattresses for all the kids, okay, and they also have a dry sink and a refrigerator. Is there any way, and I don't have a problem with the limit of the number, but is there any way that they could pay an extra cost, say, some towns will apply a sticker, okay, that you buy a sticker for that extra piece, okay? Has that been considered?
The irony of this is, a month and a half ago, that was in the initial proposal, okay? So the irony of this is, a month and a half ago, we were putting a limit and a mechanism in place to pay for extra things. That was very active out here with folks. And I felt very strongly it was the dollar amount that got folks agitated. So this time around, there's no dollar amount, but there is a limit. So right now, from that perspective, to answer your question honestly, if you got into that situation, the landfill or a private hauler.
And I think one thing, too, is this is not like the annual budget. We hope that this will significantly improve the situation for the pickup that's in spring, which I guess is late April, early May.
Mm-hmm. Late April.
And let's see how it goes. I'm hopeful that it'll be a significantly improved situation. And then if there's any wrinkles to iron out, then we can review that before the fall collection. But hopefully, within a couple of different cycles, we can find something that works for everyone.
Would it be Well, would it be difficult to make this like an online submission that somebody could do as well? So like part of the website would say, I mean, it's not hard to build out, that you're here, you want bulk pickup, you put in your address, the number of items, or even a short description of the items. And then at the last question could be, what, if you had more than four items, would you be willing to pay for that? And then at the end of a year, we take a look at it and say, all right, we've got people that are wanting to do more, and they're willing to pay for it, and we've got an idea of what that volume looks like.
People could still call in
if they didn't want to access the internet, but it would be a nice way to collect some data and alleviate some pressure downstairs.
A lot of people actually often prefer to do that because when they're trying to set something like this up, it's Sunday evening after they've been cleaning their garage out all weekend. So online is definitely
it's the way to go anyway.
Thank you.
Yes.
On your thing here, you have a complete list of items to be placed for collection must be provided. Items placed for collection but not listed shall not be collected. And then below you've got a bag or box containing multiple items. So are we listing everything that's in that bag or box?
No, you're listing the bag. You're listing the bag.
No, you're not going to list it. It's limited to a ballpark of 50 pounds.
So if you have three boxes, you say three boxes.
Yeah, right. Correct. Yeah.
The other thing is, you keep talking about the three items, but from what you posted about the other towns that had limits, they also included a monthly collection of bulk pickup, which is probably why they could limit.
Not every town.
Most of them.
No, I respectfully disagree with
you. Besides us that don't have it on your chart. Mm-hmm. Unless that's wrong.
And with the web-based thing, if we could like make it so it populates a couple generic items so that you don't have to type them all in, that would be great as well.
A number of the communities that do offer monthly collection are also charging fees every time for every day.
That's right.
So that is it's certainly an option, but there does is a cost that comes with that.
Is it?
And I kind of questioned your additional statement here about additionally at least free charge for regular trash collection on a monthly or quarterly basis. That kind of sounded like a threat.
It's just a notation of how they do their trash collection. Mm-hmm. It's part of the data that we gathered.
Every community has to find what's right for them, and I think that's another thing we're trying to do, trying to get better at this, but also what's right for our community. And again, at least the impact, the input that we've gotten after it was first proposed was most people were upset about the fee. It was not the limitations, they understood why. So taking that cue, we're basically saying, well, we're going to try something that doesn't require a fee, and then let's do it a few cycles and see where it all ends up.
So the last time, did you pick up all of the construction stuff that was out?
Dave?
No.
Then I don't understand what the problem has been. I mean, it sounds to me like you're complaining about hazardous waste construction and all of that that's being put out. I understand the mattresses not being bagged and those things, but I honestly think that was lack of communication because I had never heard of that. So, I mean, and if you look back on your previous things, you have what you can collect, but there's nothing about bagging anything.
That's because we just recently implemented
it. We just started
that's
that.
That's what I'm saying. You can't use that as an argument.
The argument I got is
I think we're
going to
try to do the right thing. Would you stop nitpicking about a bunch of baloney and listen? I mean, really? Come on now. No, really.
You talking to me like that.
Well, I tell you what, you seem to be a very unhappy person about everything. Well, I'm sorry. There's just a point where we're trying to make something better. We're going to try to make it better, work from there. We've heard from the community, and we need to move forward. And, this idea that, yes, there is an impact. You say there's no impact. The the tipping fees that we take to Worcester County have, what was it, doubled?
$18,500 versus $9,500 last year. That's the problem.
And it's been growing.
That was an estimate. That wasn't $18,000. They added that's
it's still a best guess scenario because the last pickup was double what it was the year before.
Well, I know, but if you look at it, it's only $1,000 more than the year before. Each year it's gone up because costs go up.
Double?
The amount of tons that we've transported has also gone up. It's not just cost, it's also the volume
also
that generates that
bigger
cost.
Community now. I mean, you can't continually add development and then complain because you've got extra trash from it. That's what I'm thinking about.
You got to pay for it. We have to pay for it. It's a service everybody seems to want.
The point of having those communities was that extra taxes coming in were going to resolve that issue.
I give.
I guess not, huh?
I give. I don't know what you do. I mean, this is the best scenario I've seen yet.
Yes.
Just a quick question. What's the ultimate goal of this bulk waste program? Is it for convenience for residents, or is it because it's cheaper? Or basically kind of free, but within your taxes?
Yeah, it's both. It's convenience for sure.
Have you looked into possibly just doing for a certain time frame of reducing the dump costs, say for 1 week, if you take 10 refrigerators there, you're going to reduce the cost, so it would reduce the burden on the amount of vehicles that are running around?
Well, if I understand you correctly, the landfill is not under our...
It's completely separate?
Yes.
Yeah, it's not our way.
Let's do it. Okay.
What about like a dumpster day or something like that where we have to come to you? You wouldn't have parade riding through your neighborhood. I mean, I guess that's you towing vehicles running around, that's the cost. The employees operating the vehicles running around, that's the cost. You do like a dumpster day in an open area, maybe, I guess it's a little bit of inconvenience for some people to come down here to look at the vehicles and stuff. Say maybe we'll do this one term.
If they've got a way to get to a dumpster, they can just go to the landfill themselves.
Then you have the extra tipping fee. That's what he's saying. Is you're doing the same thing, but you're not mobilizing people and equipment.
Right. You have to show our ID that we're a resident, and then you can see what we're giving you. So you can say, all right, you're up to your four. Anything passed here, give me X amount of dollars. You don't need, like, you know, all these people working. You can have, like, five guys or whatever. I don't know. I'm not just the public works director to know what that requires, but I don't know if my idea is.
I heard it was a convenience factor for most of the people I talked to. Didn't want to see the service go away or have to pay for it. That's what I heard from the public. So
I'm not saying you have to pay for it. I'm just saying it's, you know.
Well, so you don't have to pay, but you still, it's the convenience of it being set in front of your house if you're 70 years old and you can't take the refrigerator to the dump or a few suitcases or whatever. I think it's convenience of what I heard.
We do one time, we'll do it this way. The other time, I don't know. I'm just trying to figure out. I mean, it's a stretch.
I mean, I think we've heard a lot of really good ideas, but if we try something with the intention of saying, let's see how it works, let's revisit it, if it's not working well, then we'll adjust. And maybe we go to a dumpster day and only picking up four times with the option to buy additional things.
I think your comment
but
has
we
merit.
Don't know until we try.
Yeah. I'm just going to add on top of it. I mean, I understand. You're right. We have to limit what we can do. I personally walked around last year. I didn't have any stuff to put out, but I was just taking my dog for a walk. I'm watching people with Delaware license plates drive around dumping dirt dumps on our properties.
That's the whole point.
So here's the thing. You collect our four items, now we got your crap sitting on our yard. I mean, I understand you're not going to take it, but it's just like sometimes these things where you leave it at the end of your driveway, people know in other towns. They come here at night. Stuff in our yard. They're just going to pick it up anyway. That's right. Now I'm stuck. I know you're not going to do anything about it because it's really not your right. Now I'm stuck with dirt in my yard if that happens, you know. So if you do a dumpster day, you have to show your ID. You know who I am. You know I live in this neighborhood. You have my ID. It kind of eliminates that a little bit too.
Any other suggestions?
Until we find something that works a little bit better. I'd like to make a motion that we approve this special waste collection policy.
Can I ask that we review it again in a year, though? If we approve it, that we take a look and see how it's working?
And that's
that sounds reasonable.
That's the original intent.
Okay.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Brittingham to approve the bulk waste collection policy as presented. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Okay. Let the record show that it's a unanimous decision. Okay. Now we're on item number 5, which is will be a public hearing on a resolution 2020-01, the annexation of two farms. One, the former McDonald's property, and the property that is, I guess, immediately behind it. Is that the correct way to explain that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. So, and go ahead and we'll now start the public hearing. Does anyone wish to address the mayor and council regarding the potential annexation of these two properties? Yes, sir.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. I'm Joseph Moore, 319 South Main Street, and I'm representing the petitioners for annexation this evening. To my right is Bob Mitchell, of course, who's the Director of Environmental Services in Worcester County. And we filed our application and went to the Planning Commission on December 11th, where we submitted our plan for their recommendation to you. And at that time, we had several exhibits, and I'd like to put those up one by one at this point in time. First of all, our area that we are seeking to have annexed is the area which is immediately beside the annexed area just east of Seahawk Road. The annexation of the town already includes this, and this is our property right next to it. We have two parcels, the old McDonald's property and the the Myers Tool property. The reason that we are seeking annexation for both, as you may know, we are required to be contiguous to the town. The Myers property actually surrounds, and I think, Mary, my next exhibit, the Myers property actually surrounds the property that is the old McDonald's. And so, therefore, the Myers owners, Mike Myers, trustee, has joined in to our annexation. The area is a little over 2 acres. It is contiguous to the town. And the purpose of the annexation is, frankly, to allow the property to have a use. And with respect to that, Mr. Mitchell, you and I have had numerous discussions. The actual, what I'll call the old McDonald's property, and that's the Two Farms, Inc. property. It's Two Farms, Inc. is the corporation which owns Royal Farm. So the Two Farms, Inc. property is surrounded by Myers, but it's my understanding, Mr. Mitchell, that there are failed septic systems in the area. Is that correct?
Yes. So you can see the easement coming out from Lot 1 down to the septic.
You can address if you want to.
There's the easement coming out, and this field is failed. This is the eastern portion of the property as you go east on Route 50. You can, if anyone recalls, you could, in the old days, and I mean old days, in the last 5 years when this facility's been closed, you could see a brown stain there from dead grass. That was really left over from the rejuvenation that failed for the septic system. The grease and oil grease from the McDonald's really just killed that system there. So.
And you are the determining factor in the county with respect to the allowance of on-site septic disposal systems, are you not?
That's correct.
And is it correct that you would not grant an on-site usage for the Two Farms, Inc. property?
No, this field cannot be. It's dead.
So is it a correct statement that in the event, well, and I should say for the record, of course, the mayor and council's policy with respect to annexation is if you're not annexed, we can't use your sewer nor your water. So it is a requirement to connect to the Berlin facility that we be annexed. Mr. Mitchell, is it correct that in the event that we were not annexed, it would create the fact that the property could not be used for any purpose?
Yes, we've told realtors and developers that this property can't be reused again until they get a sufficient means of sewage disposal.
Thank you. Mary, if you would go to the next one. This is kind of the Google Earth situation. The corporate limit is right here, which is the red line, and the subject property is immediately adjacent to it. And the use for the property will probably, and Mr. Engelhart can state more than me probably, but the intended use of the property is for an AutoZone property. And Dave, if I got my numbers close, I think there are approximately 817 EDUs which are not allocated or reserved for other uses that are available in the town.
If that's not accurate, it's awful close. Yeah, we're eight something, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I thought it was 817, and maybe it was 871. But in any
no, case. I believe it's 817 as we talked about last week.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's going on numbers that Mr. Moore's going on numbers I gave him last week from our Department of Water Resources.
Right. And the point is that the EDUs, which would be paid for and reserved if they were not immediately used, are probably in the neighborhood of 5 to 6 because these uses on the property are not residential. They are commercial, which brings us to our request that you would allow the zoning of B2 for the zone. You also have in your record the letter from the county commissioners, and the county commissioners do concur with the annexation and the zoning because it is very similar to the zoning that is in the county right now, which is C2 zoning. So we're not asking to increase the utilization potential of the property. We're actually asking you all to consider annexation so that we can have any beneficial use of the property at all. Obviously, when we come into town, as you all know, you're going to sign a resolution which will have an annexation agreement attached. We will be paying taxes. We will be paying all public charges. And we will be just a modest increase in the commercial area of the town. I had one more aerial photograph which simply shows, again, a close-up of the property. But this, again, shows the corporate limits immediately adjacent to us. And we're asking you to allow us to become a part of the town.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
You represent the...
I represent the two applicants.
Okay. And Mr. Mitchell, you're here as an agent of Worcester County?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was clear.
Joe, is there any plans for any different type of entrance or exit for this property?
Well, the entrance and exit right now are within the town. They're here. And the reason that we couldn't have any other entrance at this point in time from Route 50 was, as Bob said, our other potential entrance over here was used as a septic facility. Those issues are certainly matters that will be addressed when site plan approval is submitted to the Planning Commission of the town. Access, parking, use, and the development of the properties will all be there. Tonight is simply allowing us to become part of the town, to begin that process within the town provisions rather than in the county. Because as the county, as Mr. Mitchell said, the county is not going to let us use the property for any use. But all those will be addressed indeed.
The Safeway property is not...
If that's already annexed. It's already. That's already...
It's not owned by the same...
Yes, it is. It's owned. Okay. The what... Council Vice President Brigham, is the Safeway property is owned by Two Farms Inc. Actually, Two Farms Inc. owns an extensive area surrounding the other uses, but because of the fact, number one, we have to be contiguous to the town. Number two, the state law on land use does not allow an annexation from the town to create what they call an enclave in the county. And there are two adjacent properties that could be considered enclaves if they were not annexed, because they would be bounded by Route 50 and then on three sides by the town. So this is a step toward the potential use of what is already in your growth area. That's the other thing. Your growth area that has been established goes all the way past the church use and up to the other commercial facility that's in the county. So we're already within your growth area, and as you know, when you all establish a growth area, that means that the mayor and council have determined the potential to have that area annexed into the town, provided that you agree to zone it in an appropriate use.
Does anyone have any other questions for Bob or Joe?
Bob, does that future service road cut through either one of these parcels?
No, it does not.
It goes behind it, Bob.
Okay. That's proposed.
That's proposed.
Yeah, off Seahawk Road, basically. Mm-hmm. Yep, that's one thing.
Yes.
There's no intent here to have another access off Route 50, which I think would be probably very difficult.
Well, that of course, that's up to the state highway
administration. Yeah, of course, but I'm saying, you know, they're trying to keep everything properly distanced.
And the only difference is legally here, Mayor, it is not a limited access highway, but you're right. It may very well be a difficult situation getting another entrance permit off Route 50.
And Seahawk Road is definitely, you know, we're trying to encourage development between the middle school northward to US 50.
Right, and of course, we do have our potential access here off Seahawk Road, as well as the existing entrance off of Route 50, which facilitates both of these properties.
Right, yes. Okay. Is there any other questions, please, gentlemen? Okay, do we have any motion or? Oh, I'm sorry.
Public here.
Does anyone else have any questions?
Yes, sir. A formality. I'm sure it's taken care of, since it's not clear in the annexation agreement if there's a mainline extension to connect the property, which I'm sure there is, if that's taken care of by the property owner.
The one of the amendments that Mr. Fleetwood and Mr. Gaskell reminded me to put in our annexation agreement is that if there is any infrastructure improvements that need to be made, including extension of sewer or water facilities, it will be done at the expense of the applicant.
Thank you. I said that property owner. Since it wasn't in our document, just to bring that.
Then it's in there. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Good question.
Anybody else? Yep. Closed
the hearing. Okay. Any other comments or questions?
Thank you.
Public hearing now stands closed.
I'll make a motion to approve Resolution 2020-01, annexation of Two Farms.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Purnell to approve the resolution for the annexation of Two Farms property that's just been discussed in the public hearing. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
Opposed.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Let the record
thank
show.
Thank you all very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Let the record show that the vote was 4-1. All right. Next, we have our. Next, we have our departmental reports, and we'll start with the Finance Director Natalie Salee.
I really
don't have any soon. Just a reminder to check on the calendar for the budget. March the 9th will be introduction for tax, and before that, it would be an advertisement going to the local newspapers.
Thank you. Next is Deputy Town Administrator Mary Bowler.
As promised, and I'm sure anxiously awaited, here's more census info for you. This is just to give you an idea of just really a few. The sheet that this was actually pulled from had about 50 different things indicating how census data is used. These struck me as some of the most relevant to our area. Everything from decision-making at all levels of government, obviously, as I've discussed to date. It will play into the drawing of legislative districts, including town election districts. Typically, well, in the past, of course, with technology, things always move a little faster. But typically in the past, we received updated census numbers about 4 to 5 years following the census. And at that time, we examined our election district numbers and acted accordingly. I don't know when we can expect to get the final data from the 2020 census. But once we do, we'll, of course, look at our election district numbers and make adjustments. And at the same time, the county, the state, and the federal government will also be looking at that data to determine whether or not adjustments need to be made to school districts, election districts, just about any kind of districting that you can think of will be impacted.
It also impacts our potential for grants as well. Right?
Yes,
not all, but most, many of them.
Yes, it definitely does. I think that I spoke to this when I actually spoke to a reporter, but I just feel like it's the kind of information that bears repeating, particularly in light of the fact that the coronavirus is currently obviously very much in the forefront of the news. One of the pieces of information that they gave us at one of the meetings we attended was that when there is an epidemic in an area, the CDC will look at population numbers for that area, and they will send out medicine accordingly. If they don't have accurate numbers, and those numbers are almost always going to be undercounts rather than overcounts, they won't send enough medicine. And that's how, you know, we tend to look at our country and our systems and think, you know, how could this be that there's not enough medicine to treat people? But that's one of the things that causes that kind of shortfall, is the lack of appropriate information. It just impacts so many things that I think people don't think about and really need to be aware of. The numbers are very, very important.
Thank you.
As we get closer to the actual census date, could we maybe put like a countdown on maybe the website, one, and on the meeting packet to say, hey, look, we've got this many days. Similar like when you're walking into one of the big chains and you
sure.
see X days until a holiday.
Sure. And actually, I'm working on something for the website now, which will include links to YouTube videos that tell people how to fill it out. And in the coming weeks, as I said, I'll have more information about what kind of questions are on the actual forms and how people will get those forms.
Perfect. Thank you.
All right. Next, we have the police chief.
Okay.
Thank you. And next is our electric utilities director, Tim Lawrence.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I have a few things to report on since last meeting. 306 West Street, we replaced a utility pole there that was defective. We also had demands and meter reading and then rereads. 111 Franklin Avenue, we installed a new underground service at that location. 104 Davis Court, homeowner is actually here at the meeting today. He had a new solar system installed on his house, and we actually installed a net meter, and they turned the system on, so it's operating. We have a total of around 42 systems now, I believe, in town, as far as residential and commercial total. So that's growing, you know, monthly, basically. Then also at 300 Bay Street, we installed a new underground service there. And then on Wednesday, this past Wednesday, there was an accident that occurred at Germantown Road and Route 113. We had to respond there because the traffic control box for the State Highway Administration was damaged. We had to de-energize the power feeding to it. Then also, I was actually off on Friday, but I was called anyway about the power outage. There was a storm that came through town.
Yeah.
Well, during that storm, we have a total of three circuits out of our substation. All three circuits operated at individual times. So whatever came through town, it must have been pretty severe to operate all three circuits. But we actually didn't have anybody totally out of power, just blinked the lights basically for a few minutes on that. You had to redo that. Also, one other thing I wanted to mention, we have two apprentices that are in the lineman training program. As of today, one of the apprentices actually completed step two of the lineman training program. There's a total of eight steps. So he completed step two, and then he'll be going to step three in July. From there on, the program takes about 4.5 years to complete. That's all I have. Thank
Does
you.
Anyone have any questions for Tim?
You also replaced a pole on Middle Street, correct?
Yeah, I was going to report that in next week's meeting.
Oh, well, I'm jumping the gun because I heard evening.
I actually turned that in to the next meeting.
Okay, well, we're going to get a little head start.
Okay.
I heard from some of my neighbors that it was watching a well-oiled machine.
Yes, they have a lot of experience in doing that type of job, and it's all scheduled ahead of time, so the homeowners know that the power is going to be down for that period of time, and it just kind of moves along.
Well, you did a good job.
And thank you.
Next week, or 2 weeks from now, I'll tell you the same thing.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Next is Water Resources Director Jamie Latchin.
Yeah. On Friday, February the 1st, at probably about 7:30, I got a phone call. As you can see, the valve roughly on the top left-hand corner, the match, say, roughly 1950, so pushing 70 years old. It all was lead joints. It's hard to explain, but it was very hard to find the 10-inch cross, which a lot of places don't just have readily available. So most of our day was focused on trying to find one, which we were lucky to find one. We installed two 10-inch valves and one 6-inch valve. We had to go back Tuesday morning to install that. Just because we had to get some more material, because at 10 or 11 o'clock at night, a lot of people were getting tired and ready to go home. So we were able to cap it and work through the system was backfed so we could feed everything. We went back in Tuesday morning, really didn't interfere anybody. Water was off for about an hour, tied the 6-inch back in right here by the right. If you dial them right, you can see that they're capped right by the manhole. That's also what got in our way, because in the picture on the bottom left, you can see it. So there's a 90 that jogs it up, and then there's a 4-inch that comes off. So trying to align all that was tricky. So we ended up cutting a lot of that out due to the fact is it was all lead. If you see the pipe there in the center on the bottom hole, the yellow one, that's a gas main that was laying right on top of our water line. So, you know, it was carefully digging. We had good help, and, you know, we got it done. So water was back on roughly 3 o'clock Sunday morning. Did interview a couple businesses, spoke to most of them. Everybody's been very polite, and they understand that, you know, it happens.
And that was at the intersection of Broad Street and West Street.
Yes, sir. Yeah. And I will say thanks to our great friends at State Highway. I called them Saturday morning, told them what was going on. I said, I need a lane closure. They called me back and says, nope, we'll shut the whole street down, which if we did it, well, we would have had to shut it down regardless. I mean, but they sent a crew out, took care of all the flagging or the shutting down Broad Street for us. And then when I told them we were going to pave Wednesday morning, we were going to cold patch it. They told us not to do it, just pave it Wednesday morning. Had a contractor in here Wednesday morning, had the street paved, and they were happy, so that makes us all happy.
Yeah, we've always had a good relationship and working partnership.
Yes, and they, I mean, like I said, when I called them at 8:30, they were here 11 o'clock. They had a crew come out of Snow Hill, and they stayed with us the whole time. They insisted we had light towers we borrowed from them, Town of Ocean City and ours, just because it was such a very large hole and couldn't get the lights up there close enough. So we tried to flood it and didn't really hear much complaint from the residents. And, you know, a couple of the neighbors brought coffee and donuts out and some drinks and stuff for the people. So, you know, when in need, the people do show up and help out. That's all I have. That's our big thing for the...
That's pretty big. And hopefully now that all the valves are replaced, hopefully it will be decades before that has to be done again.
Yes, sir.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Jamie?
I have one question about the process. You use the bigger equipment to get close, but then a lot of that's hand dug.
Well, it is true, but if you look in the top right-hand corner, the vac truck. Okay. That is our lifeline.
Right.
You know, if that did a lot, I mean, when we took it to Ocean Pines Monday morning and dumped the dirt off of it, there was only about, I don't know, the tank's like 8 foot tall. So give or take, there was probably 6 foot of dirt into it. So that's roughly what it, you know, that is our lifeline. I mean, that takes care of a lot of the hand shoveling. I mean, you still got to break it free, but
right.
Getting the mud and slop out, I mean, you know, it just takes care of a lot.
Well, good job.
I get seen it a lot.
Yeah.
All right. Next is Dave Englehart, planning director.
I think it's the chief.
The chief's
already gone.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
You got to pay attention tonight.
I thought we were out of order because normally Jamie goes before Tim usually. You got me all messed up. So we'll go to the next mayor and council meeting. On the 24th, there's a public hearing advertised for the rezoning of a parcel on the north side of Route 50, just west of North Main Street. The Planning Commission voted unanimously at their meeting in November to rezone that from industrial to B2 shopping district. So, again, commercial property like there is across Route 50 for the Buist property and the State Police Barracks, and across 818 where the Sunrise Church property is. So that whole area would be B2 shopping district. So that's a public hearing we'll hold at the mayor and council meeting of the 24th. Wednesday night this week on the 12th, Planning Commission will meet. There's a lot of it. We're crazy busy lately with topics, but the agenda is busy that night. The Sunrise Church is doing a subdivision of some of their property, so that'll be on the agenda as a final subdivision plat approval. They had come previously also in the November meeting and got their preliminary plat approval out of the way. We also, on Wednesday night, South Moon Under, that complex over on Franklin Avenue, and Route 113. It's site plan approval, but it's for some, I thought it was necessary to bring it because it's some redevelopment to the property. No buildings, but it's good. They want to create a central drive to the buildings off Franklin Avenue, and they also want to repave the entire property where, if you've been back there or you can see it really from Franklin, they have a lot of gravel areas. It's not all paved, so they're going to pave the entire area. That's parking, just some site improvements. But I think that's for what will be some future development of the property. So I thought it was important that the Planning Commission give it site plan approval. We also have what is the final building for Berlin Main Place, the medical complex up here on North Main Street, building number 5. That's site plan approval. And then we have a concept plan to look at for Mr. Derrickson up on North Main Street and Old Ocean City Boulevard across from Cheers there. There's the one large lot right on the corner. He would like to build two mixed-use buildings on the property. Retail downstairs, that is B2 also, that's shopping district zoning. So he can have retail downstairs and apartments upstairs, like we have right here downtown. So that'll be a concept plan. It's not yet site plan approval, but he goes before them to get their suggestions and whatever they want, whatever they would like to see on the site plan. So that's a busy meeting Wednesday night, and I welcome you all to attend. That's all I have, Mr. Mayor.
Does anyone have any questions for Dave?
And Mayor, Ivy Wells is not here. She did text me. She is a grandmother. She's playing grandma right now.
Very good. Excellent. And if no one has any questions for Dave, then we'll have our town administrator's report for Jeff.
I have a few things, Mayor and Council. Just some housekeeping things. On the 21st of February, I know Council Member Tindall takes interest in this, but we will have a preliminary rounds regarding health care renewal. Things that will be presented are trends, and then the Affordable Care impacts and the updates on that, and also the Kaiser report. That'll be on the 21st at 9:30.
Jeff, can I get the Kaiser report early?
Sure.
Thank you.
It's interesting reading. And then on the 13th of March at 9:30, with healthcare again, we'll be meeting to prepare the RFPs that will go out for bid, and then we should have those back in a couple, 3 weeks. I do want to let Mayor and Council and the citizens know, and Dave, you can chime in, but the 113-346 intersection, you heard Mr. Franklin discuss that. That's getting ready to go now. Also, 376 and 113, probably midsummer, if things go well with what State Highway is doing at this point, if they get everything in order. But both those intersections, widening both the 113 end and also the 346 or the 376 route. So
better access and less stacking at both intersections.
Right.
We've been through a lot of meetings with State Highway over the last two and a half years. So we're glad to see these get underway, finally get moving.
Okay. For the public and for the newspapers, you'll get more. But we did this last year. We called it Social Security Day in Berlin. Only thing you're going to get here is a bottle of water, maybe a cookie. Okay. But seriously, a district manager comes down from Wilmington, Delaware for us. He was fantastic last year.
Yeah, he was.
Fantastic. That will run on March 13th from 1 to 3 in the chamber. It is open to the public. So please, if you have anyone that, if you're already enrolled in Social Security, you've got questions, the heck with the phone, heck with waiting in line, they're going to be right here. Okay, so, and the guy is very, very knowledgeable. Mary, would you go to the, I want to show everyone, Tim mentioned that we had a little storm come through last Friday. Well, it dropped a little bit over 2 inches of rain. So what I want folks to see, the top left slide, you can see there is water over the road. You look at the top right slide, that's the after. That was about an hour after the rain stopped, and look at the difference. Now, if you drop down, the bottom pictures are the new submerged gravel wetland. Take a look at the one on the right. That's when the deluge happened, or that little weather event that Tim mentioned. And then about an hour later, you can see on the left. So all indicators are, from folks that I spoke to down in that general area, they see a change. It's not perfect, but they see a change. I know Council Member Purnell was out there as well. We had some observations, but I think overall this project did what it was intended. Jamie, anything to add?
No. You hit it all.
Okay. So that's a good thing.
Yes, it is.
Now, the big news that I'm going to seek approval from the Mayor and Council, and I have no pictures, unfortunately. I don't think I do I? Nope.
No.
Heron Park, the last probably 6 weeks or so, there's been a significant amount of work that's been accomplished by town staff. I'm sad to see Dave Wheaton go because I did want to publicly recognize him, but I will get Jamie Latcham and I will get Tim Lawrence. Everyone contributed, and that even includes Arnold's folks with the police department, whether he knows it or not. A lot of employee involvement, hands-on. What I can tell the mayor and council, I've showed pictures prior, but when you enter the park on the left-hand side, it looks like it never happened. The right-hand side, all that rebar, it's gone. I mean, and it's like it never happened. Up on the berm, the one platform that was up there for a floor for one of the buildings, again, one of the employees in Public Works came up with the idea, said it's a great platform, it's up high. why don't we put a couple picnic tables? People can sit up here. Great idea. So we did move a couple picnic tables down. So I am asking the mayor and council this evening to grant approval to open the park effective tomorrow morning. The only other thing that's left to do down there, on the 19th of February, we will have EA Engineering in there down at the site where the chemical spill did happen to do their shallow water testing, but it won't cause any interference to anyone out there. They'll be in and out that day. And again, I do want to reiterate with everyone that there are no chemicals on site at that location. They're gone. So I am asking the mayor and council for approval to reopen.
Do you want a motion?
Yeah, I think that would be good because I think we made a motion to temporarily.
I'll make a motion to open it.
Okay. We have a motion by Councilmember Tindall to reopen Heron Park effective tomorrow morning. And that's when the sun is shining, and that's when it normally opens these things. So all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
And the one thing I do want to share, it's if you go into that park, on the right-hand side where the clarifier tank was, all that concrete, all that rebar, there's a lot of earth there now, fresh new earth, as I call it. It is extremely muddy, okay? It will dry come March time frame. We'll seed it. So hopefully come May, June time frame, we'll have grass coming up, and that will absorb a lot of the water. But right now it's just bare dirt, a lot of dirt. How much dirt would you guess, Jamie?
We figured out about 14,000 yards, I think it was, give or take. 180 to 190 tandem loads of soil.
And then it costs nothing, just so everyone understands that. That was the earth that was removed from the submerged gravel wetland.
Repurposed.
And that concludes my report, Mayor.
All right, thank you. Is any members of the council have any questions for that measure?
Okay. I have one. Sure. Can we maybe make a request to the 911 center about the data for Route 818 and Route 50 and Route 113 and Germantown Road? Because those are both pretty dangerous intersections. We talked about some of the growth that's taking place and some of the volume increase that we may be seeing with the dualization of the highway. I think that we need to look at advocating for lights at those two intersections.
I totally agree. So, and one of the things I wanted to note is that, and I totally agree, is and I also know all the approvals they got to get in Baltimore where they don't even know we are.
Right.
So, which makes it very frustrating. But
we'll invite them down in June.
Yeah, we can get them to come. But it's interesting because when I drove to Snow Hill on Saturday, dual highway is essentially done, and they have a blinking signal that was never there before. Immediately, when you come off the town road and onto the highway, I don't understand why, it, without any great big fuss, they couldn't at least put those blinking signals in there and then do their traffic studies and they reach a certain thing. But I think they could at least do that. And then at least some of the infrastructure will be there when they get the approval to put in the lights. And I'm hoping that we'll see something, not years from now, but in the more immediate future.
I just think that if we can get some data and get the ball moving in that direction, I mean, there are a lot of school buses and a lot of people heading to work every morning, and it's a dangerous spot, both of them.
Consensus, and then I'll put together a letter and share it with you all and call some folks and... Yep. Let's see if we can get that ball rolling.
Sounds good. Is that appreciated?
Great idea.
Okay. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Thanks. Thank you. I don't have any comments.
I'm sorry. I thought we were on.
No, that's all right. That's okay. It's no problem.
It's getting late.
None?
Nope.
Okay.
It's all begun.
All right. Do we have any questions or comments from the public? Yes.
You're starting to kick around finances and have a couple of tax examples. So I thought I'd mention that, this past year, the tax season was pretty inactive. There were 8 municipal increases, 8 municipal decreases. They all were averaging around 3.5 cents up or down between the 8 that went up and 8 that went down. You you increased our taxes 12 cents, about 320% of what the average increase was, of the 8 that increased in the 157 Maryland municipalities. And if you look at a statewide average, you were probably about twice the state average for property taxes, just to be considered as you move forward in the process.
Again, it's all relative, because the tax rates generally in this area are higher than they are in the metropolitan areas where
the property values are generally lower, but that's not the case in Berlin at all. We're on par with a lot of
beg to differ. I beg to differ with that. Yeah, Prince George and Montgomery County is absolutely higher.
PG prices. Montgomery is not the eastern shore, nor is Western Maryland.
Didn't say
Western
it was.
Maryland, Central Maryland. If you get outside of the Beltway, Troy, we're the most expensive municipality in the state of Maryland. The town I grew up in, Frederick County, they had a 5 cent decrease, and their current rate is 0.2992. And that town compares to ours very, very well. More sprawled out, a larger town by 20%, and it's run much, much more efficient. So you can argue all you want, but you're going to be pulling some stuff out of your backside.
I don't think we compare with Frederick.
Yeah. I think those projections, again, were to show if the council does want to do some of these, projects, what it would take. I will, again, be making my recommendation on March the 9th, and then we'll go from there. But, you know, that I understand your concern about the tax rates. But also know that if I have anything to apologize for, it's not bringing it up promoting or insisting on a tax increase for 12 years. That was a big mistake.
There were a lot of mistakes, Chief. A lot of them cost us a lot of money.
Well, you can have your opinion. I know things happen, and we're, I'll put it this way. The great exodus of people didn't happen.
Try to sell.
Huh? Excuse me?
Try to sell and recover your investment. I mean, you could because you bought 1971.
Well, it depends if you...
When you bought it.
When you bought it, if you... Anywhere. If you got caught...
The last 20 years.
Oh.
You're not getting out of Berlin without going home.
I'm sorry, I respect
our greatest group period is between 2009 and 2010.
If you got caught up in the Great Recession and all that, that's one thing. That doesn't go back 20 years. Yes?
I have two things, and I know we're getting late, and I'll make it quick. First of all, I guess probably Jamie, or I don't know, noticing that when we have a significant rainstorm, the end of Burley and Main Street is really puddling up. More than I've seen it so before.
It was, the state highway. What happened, we found it out Friday, is somebody was cutting tree limbs by the school and was throwing the limbs in the ditch, and in return, it plugged up that culvert that runs underneath of South Main Street. We finally finished removing it today once the flow got down enough, but that kind of bottlenecked everything right there.
And I can add to that as well. Friday, I witnessed it. We had two employees out there with the storm drains. And they were precious because they said the water's going nowhere. So that has been cleaned out.
Okay, the second thing, because to reiterate Mr. Tindall, I watched today that pole being removed by those four gentlemen and a supervisor occasionally. They were there at 8 o'clock this morning. That pole came out. The stuff came off it. The pole went in. The stuff went on it. And they drove off at 12:30. I never saw those men take a break. They worked in tandem. I mean, it was like a ballet.
Yep.
It was beautiful, and I think they need to be commended for that.
Beautiful. When they change out the utility pole and the power is out, but they're nonstop. They don't take a break.
That was impressive.
If it runs too much, they just keep going until it's finished.
Thank you.
I'll let them know.
Does anyone have any other questions or comments?
Yeah, I just have a clarification. I'll be real quick, like two questions. On the option A for the budget, heated hose crack probe machine, is there any, can that be used for any of the road work that's on the list here? Or no?
No, that's more, if you can visualize having a driveway, an asphalt driveway, most folks on an annual or every other year, they bring someone to seal the driveway. And the first thing you do before you seal asphalt is you fill in the cracks. And then you cover it up with a sealer, and it all
and it looks pretty. But no, you can't use that for any of the roads that we're talking about now.
And then for the Chevrolet Tahoe, it's $40,000. I would assume there's going to be more cost to add the lights and whatnot.
Yeah, all included.
So, hey. So everyone understands on the vehicles that we purchase, there is a Maryland State vehicle purchase contract. So, I can go on and on. I'll talk to you all off key here in a second. But the reality is, it's incredible what the difference is in price.
Always selling you old one. Yeah,
man. Is there any other questions or comments?
Press.
Yeah, does the press have any comments or questions?
Move to adjourn.
Thank you. We stay in adjourn. Thank you.
He looked like he's not Jack asleep. I'm going to have to send something over there.
Stand up, ma'am.
Hey, Jack, you don't go nowhere.
I'm going to have a nice question.